Well, we're moving along. We're up to the point of looking at the trials today. So hopefully, in terms of like getting our timeline straight, I know the adults could tell us a lot about the timeline after yesterday, and I'm sure they're going to have lots to talk about today about the timeline as well. So where would we be, timeline-wise? What do you think? All right, we're talking about the trials now. What do you think they would have started? We're talking about like when Jesus had been taken to Annas. That's really the first thing they seem to do. They arrest him and take him to Annas. Where do you think that would be? Yeah, probably somewhere around midnight right here. It really is based on the cockcrows, though, when you start looking at it. Remember that passage in Mark they had you look up about the cockcrows? When it was talking about timeline, how they like went through the night. So they would have one at 9 o'clock. There would be a 9 o'clock one. And it's not about the cockcrows, but it says that when he divides the night up, he talks about the evening and then midnight. And then the cockcrow. So evidently, a lot of people in history, at least, they think that the 3 o'clock one in the morning was known as the cockcrow. So, and that was probably the one Jesus was referring to, because most of the Gospels just said Jesus said to Peter that before the cock crows, you will deny me thrice. But then Mark puts in there before the cock crows twice. So, and Mark actually records the two cockcrows. The people's best guess is that the one everybody was referring to was the one that was like right here at 3 a.m. And then the other one, the first one, when Peter first denied, was probably around midnight, which means then you end up having to have Jesus taken just before midnight and appears before Annas, and then Peter's first denial occurs there. And then it would run, this section that we're doing right now would run all the way into the morning because probably right as first dawn came, that's when they would meet before the Sanhedrin, and then you have to have time to go before Pilate and Herod and Pilate. So all of that would have taken place right up until he was crucified at 9 o'clock in the morning right here. So this is the overnight period that we're looking at today. If you're wondering where in Jerusalem we really are, we left him yesterday up in the Garden of Gethsemane up here, and that's where he's arrested. And they think that he probably was taken through the Kidron Valley back in through the gate that he originally left, and taken down very close to where the Last Supper was, first of all to Annas' house, because he appears before Annas, which most folks claim is close to Caiaphas' house. Then he goes to Caiaphas, and then he goes up into the Sanhedrin up in here, and then from the Sanhedrin he goes up to where they turn him over to Pilate. Pilate in turn sends him back to Herod's palace. Herod sends him back to Pilate, and that's pretty well where you end today. So yeah, there's a lot of traveling in today between the six trials. Sometimes you don't even realize that, but they're moving around in Jerusalem right here. But the distances aren't real far. So you can walk those distances, evidently, in just a few minutes. So that's evidently what they would do. Now, things to look for, all right? It's nice to get the sequence of the trials straight in your mind. I think as you're going through this today, it's good to have that, but If you don't, that's not a big deal, but I think it's important to realize, at least to some extent, who Jesus is before and why they took him there. Like, why did they take him to Annas, and then to Caiaphas, and then to the Sanhedrin? What was the strategy? And then that helps you remember what actually happened. So, why did God allow his son, whom he loved, to suffer such terrible physical and mental abuse, as you're going to watch through this period? But watch how Jesus faithfully handled this abuse against him. Even when he's physically worn out, I mean, he'd been up all day. Now we're into the night time, and he's staying up all the next night. And he just faithfully upholds God's principles, even when people were totally treating him the wrong way. And I think it can definitely illustrate to us about not panicking when bad things happen, because God can bring good things out of these terrible situations. And you can see how he does that in this case. Some of you may wonder why Judas didn't simply repent when he takes the money back in. Why didn't he repent and try to make good, make his life right, and change his ways? But you'll see he doesn't do that and seek forgiveness. Instead, he goes and hangs himself. I thought I skipped one in there. The other thing is, what about how Jesus resisted the temptation to seek vengeance when he was abused? That's what the New Testament writers pick up about Christ right now, is that when he was reviled, when he was abused, he didn't seek vengeance. And yet that is the normal human condition. We usually want to do that. And how did the events of these trials upon Jesus actually serve to condemn sin in the flesh, the trials as well as the crucifixion? And what is that good confession? That's actually picked up, the good confession that he made before Pilate. And I think that's a good thing, a practical thing we can look at today. It's also interesting to watch how they change the charges. I don't know whether you caught on to that doing the workbook. Is that in the workbook? I couldn't even remember if it was in there, how they changed the charges. If they didn't cover that, it's fun to look at how the Jewish leaders realized that when they wanted to condemn Jesus, they had to do it one way before the Jews, and they had to change the charges when they brought him up before Pilate, because Pilate didn't really care that much about their law, so then they had to make the charges different. So they really had an interesting strategy, so you might want to look at that today if you're going through it. And did the trials actually serve to help some people believe Jesus was the Christ? I mean, that's an interesting concept to watch, how as people are watching these trials, were any people being convinced that Jesus was the Christ? Because he was always converting people no matter what he did. And through all the abuse that he suffered, I think it's really good and fair to ask this question about why didn't Jesus, like Job, why didn't he say, this isn't fair, I shouldn't have to go through this, God? Why did he never go through that pathway? And I think you can find there's a lot of Old Testament Bible characters that really taught him a lot and what we can learn from that. So you're looking at the six trials now. We've got Annas and then Caiaphas and then the Sanhedrin. And then you've got Jesus before the three Gentile leaders, which is really just Pilate, Herod, and then Pilate again. And yeah, it's fun to watch his behavior, how he handled himself at this point, never giving in to all these people who are just jeering him and reviling him and falsely accusing him. And he just faithfully declares the righteousness of God all the way through this. I think you can also deal with Peter's overconfidence this morning. That might be a fun one to discuss. Being careful that as young people, when we're growing up, that we don't just become really valiant in the truth and become overconfident in our abilities to defeat sin and stay strong. And I think that's a warning for everybody. And you can watch how Jesus handles his overconfidence and attempts to show him that, no, it's not about what you can do, Peter. It's about what God can do in you. And, of course, yesterday we did a pretty good job of contrasting Peter with Judas. And it's also fun to watch how this Gentile governor that we were just reading about, how Pilate tried so hard to convince the Jewish community that this is Messiah. When Tim just read that, you know, what should I do with Jesus who's called the Messiah, the Christ? All right, what do I do with him? Here's your Messiah. And in turn, the Jews say, crucify him. And they get to the point where we have no king but Caesar. God had just orchestrated a series of events here where these Jews who hated the Romans, they really wanted a king to save them from the Romans, and Pilate knows it. So he realizes they've got to have some other motive here. And it's fun to also look at those kind of concepts. So, and in the end, the Jews tell this Gentile governor that they have no king but Caesar. And wow, what a series of events to get to that point where a Gentile king is attempting to tell the Jewish community, you have a Messiah, your king, and the Jews in the end turn around and say, we have no king but Caesar, and his blood be upon our heads. So, you know, you can just see how the angels were orchestrating all those events. And with that, we'll turn it over to you all. Have happy discussion time. Keep up the good work. And the adults, you may want to consider that passage about what was spoken by Jeremiah the prophet. I think you should figure out how that was spoken by Jeremiah and yet recorded by Zechariah. It would be a really good sidetrack.